This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, glad you could join us. It is hour number three, and boy, we got a good hour for you coming up. We're going to talk Philadelphia 76ers. Kevin Kincaid is going to join us. You know, listen, I know it's only two games, and they were two games at home and all of that, but man, people were looking for every single crack they could possibly find in the Philadelphia 76ers. I liked Toronto, too. I know there were a lot of pundits that said, boy, Toronto plays very good defense, and there's a lot of things to like about the Raptors, and they match up really well. But so far, Philadelphia is owning the series. Again, it's not a series until the home team loses, so we'll see tonight when they go to Toronto to take on the Raptors in Game 3. But nevertheless, Philadelphia is looking very good. Joel Embiid has been ridiculously fantastic. It's all playing well enough. Tyrese Maxey has been great. But again, are there still concerns about this team? Where exactly are they, and where do you, where do people see this team even after two dominating wins? Kevin Kincaid's going to join us. Then we're going to talk to Alex Strauff in Milwaukee about the Bucks. That is coming up at 40 past the hour, so in 33 minutes, we'll get the take on the world champions. All right, so this version of the Milwaukee Bucks, what does it look like? What has the season been like? Right, it is when you win a championship, there is that honeymoon period. It seemed like they went through it and, you know, had some up and down type of season where they could beat you by 20 points, but they could lose by 10. You really found an ebb and flow. But now that it's playoff time, now it's tournament time, now it's defend your title time, how does Milwaukee look in their series against the Chicago Bulls? All right, so those two things are coming up as well. Last night, big win for the Memphis Grizzlies. They didn't want to go down 0-2 at home to a very pesky and talented Minnesota Timberwolves team. I warned this before the game yesterday in the show. Minnesota celebrated insanely. That city and that team celebrated insanely that when they just got a place in the postseason from the play-in win against the LA Clippers. And I said, listen, if you're Memphis, if they can win two games at home, there's going to be a lot of energy back in Minnesota you're going to have to deal with. And I wouldn't want to be the Grizzlies having to deal with that. Again, Minnesota earned the split. Good for them. But Memphis with a 28-point win last night feel like they are a little bit more in control. But that series is now shifting to Minnesota, where it is going to be pretty energizing. And, of course, Devin Booker suffering a hamstring injury for the Phoenix Suns. We don't know how long he's going to be out and how does that affect Phoenix. All of that coming up as we get around through hour number three on the show. And we've got Kevin Kincaid coming up next. Talk Sixers as we continue.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, let's go out to our progressive guest line. We're going to talk Philadelphia 76ers, game three of their series coming up tonight in Toronto. But the Sixers have a 2-0 series lead. I was saying this earlier, this was one of those 4-5 matchups. People actually liked Toronto, the way they matched up with Philadelphia. But two big wins by the Sixers. Let's go to Kevin Kincaid. Crossingbroad.com is the website, and he covers the Sixers. So he joins us on a progressive guest line. How are you, Kevin?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
So from a standpoint of this team, again, as I mentioned earlier, people like Toronto. The pundits sort of looked at Toronto and said, that's a good matchup for them against the Sixers team. What has impressed you the most about Philadelphia in the first two games, and did it come as a surprise?
Yeah, I think it's funny because I think a lot of Sixers fans favored Toronto going into the series as well. wasn't a lot of juice for Doc Rivers in the way that they ended the regular season, I guess. But no, I think the surprise has been how good they've been offensively, for sure. Nick Nurse has been a good tactician in sort of getting the ball out of Joel Embiid's hands and limiting him and frustrating him and throwing double teams at him. But the Sixers have been an offensive machine over the first two games. I think that bodes really well because, yeah, they kind of ended the season with James Harden not looking great. Joel Embiid having to carry a lot of the load. Tyrese Maxey's really, really stepped up and come a long way this year. Tobias Harris having a couple good games, game one and game two. So I think that's been the storyline so far. Number one, you know, how good Philly is playing offensively and how well they're shooting. And number two, Nick Nurse kind of surprising me, showing a lot of outright frustration with the referee and the foul calls and whatnot. And, he's not, that's odd to me because he's not usually like that.
Did you expect any major adjustments from Nick Nurse? And if they were there, how did Philadelphia respond?
Yeah, you know, I think there was more that went through Joel Embiid for sure in game two. It was interesting because in game one, you know, there was a lot of just good outside shooting and Joel Embiid didn't even really dominate. It didn't really have to. I probably expected more from Toronto defensively in game one. In the second, you know, they were down Scotty Barnes and Gary Trent left halfway through game two. And I didn't really see a ton in terms of adjustments from him. I think their lack of size is complicating things for sure. You know, if you go back to the Toronto-Philly series from 2019, that series changed when you know, he went big, and he put Gasol and Ibaka on the floor at the same time. So he doesn't really have that now. And so I think this is the moment, you know, game three, to see what he does at home with the crowd behind him and, you know, try to get the ball out of Joel Embiid's hands or just try to make it harder for him.
There was that big boost when Harden originally had gotten to the team via the trade, and then it sort of went back and forth a little bit. Overall, though, when they're on this court, Embiid and Harden are on the court together, how was it during the regular season overall?
I mean, it was great initially because just having a floor general, somebody to direct and somebody to, you know, just find the easy pass, pick out the right pass. You know, James Harden really hasn't had a good shooting year, not for Brooklyn or for Philadelphia. And, you know, he had the hamstring injury. There doesn't look to be a lot of like burst at the rim, not a lot of lift in his legs necessarily, but he still had games where he wasn't shooting very well. He'd have like a, you know, a 3-for-12 shooting night, but he'd still have like 12 assists. You know, so I think just taking a little bit of the burden off of Joel Embiid when it comes to playmaking, you know, it's less of just post, 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 post. You know, now they're getting Tyrese Maxey involved off the ball, and they have a little bit more dynamic nature to their offense where, you know, the Sixers were like a lumbering half-court team for most of the year, and they still are. They're not an amazing transition team. He just gives them another dynamic that they didn't have.
I like the way Doc Rivers said after in game two. He said, look, our guys went down there. They got fouled. They didn't get the call, but they didn't complain about it. They backed up on defense. Is that a new trait that he had to point out? Is this normally a team that sort of fights and gets frustrated when calls aren't going their way?
Yeah, I think, you know, you see a lot of demonstrative kind of gesturing from them, you know, hands in the air or like outward frustration or whatever. And, yeah, that didn't mean that they weren't going to the foul line and hitting their free throws anyway. I mean, even when they were complaining about calls they weren't getting, they were still getting to the foul line overall 25, 27, 29, 30 times a game. And, you know, the Embiid thing is really interesting to me because, you know, if you go back 20 years, Shaquille O'Neal was shooting 12 free throws a game, right?
Yeah.
He only hit, like 51% of them or something like that, and it became like the running joke on ESPN, you know, when they were, showing the highlights on SportsCenter. But Joel Embiid hits like 80% of his free throws. So I think people notice that more and tend to complain about it more just because more of them are going in and more of his points are coming off of free throws. But, you know, every 10 or 20 years, you get a dominant big who comes around who's just unguardable. You know, and in the modern day NBA, they call more contact and the rules are a little bit different. So, you know, people can complain all they want, but, I don't know. What you do aside from lobbying the NBA to change the rules, and they did some of that last year when they got rid of the flailing and the Trae Young kind of thing we were calling it, right? So,
right.
Hey, if people don't like it, you know, try to change it again, you know?
I want to talk about Tyrese Maxey. You talked about him growing as a player. He clearly has benefited from the acquisition of James Harden. How did we get to that point? How did he grow in that role?
Well, ironically, I mean, the Ben Simmons had to clear the way for him to get more minutes this year, you know, and if, you know, Ben Simmons didn't hold out, didn't, you know, force his way out of the team, we probably wouldn't even have seen Tyrese Maxey or given him the opportunity to be what he is right now, which is crazy. But it was interesting because he came into the league as kind of a combo guard. You know, he wasn't a number one, he wasn't a number two. You know, I think you're seeing a lot of good off-ball stuff that he's able to do with James Harden, where James Harden is kind of like the veteran savvy director. Hey, set this screen for me, we're going to get this switch. You know, I'm going to fire the ball to the second side. You can catch and shoot. You can catch and drive. You can attack the closeout. He just does a lot of things well. You know, he's added three-point shooting to his arsenal this year, and he just has like the right mindset. He's just a really positive guy, hard worker, you know, fan favorite already in year two, and he just came in with the right attitude and took the opportunity he was given and proved that he's been everything and more.
These were two impressive wins, but they were wins at home, and we'll see when they're on the road. But nevertheless, there is this feeling, at least the way I see it, and I peruse a lot of different national takes on the NBA, that the Sixers are like, man, I want to get behind them, but there's something about them I just don't trust. Can you narrow that down? Is there something even in Philadelphia where that sentiment exists?
Well, Doc Rivers, number one, you know, I think people are still sour on the way that they went out last year with the Atlanta Hawks. And people were kind of wary of that when Doc came into the team after blowing, you know, however many, you know, playoff series that they blew out in L.A., you know. So yeah. I think that was number one for sure. Number two, it was, you know, how much does Harden have left in the tank? Number three was, like, you know, can Embiid be the guy in the playoffs? You know, can you close through a center? Do you need, like, a Kevin Durant or, like, a perimeter, you know, dagger-throwing type of closer? And the number four is kind of this macro-level, undefinable kind of thing where it's like, is the process cursed? You know, are we destined to never win it because the basketball gods hated the tank and the way that they built the team? You know, so there's always just kind of like a lingering malaise and kind of the pressure to justify the process and justify the tank with a deep playoff run. So I think people are just kind of, you know, always like perpetually on pins and needles over here trying to, you know, just kind of square that circle when it comes to their team and how far they can go.
Where are the Sixers in the hierarchy of the city? I grew up in New England, the Boston area, and I remember those battles with Dr. J and Daryl Dawkins and Mo Cheeks, and I remember the 83 fo-fo-fo team and whatnot.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, you see Philadelphia pop up a little bit, but then not go very far, and that's the last time we saw them in the championship was 40 years ago. Where are they on the hierarchy of Philadelphia sports?
They're a
solid number
two right
now. In terms of fans desiring to get a championship.
Yeah, well, if you're going to put it that way, then I would say number one, they want that championship number one. I think, you know, the Eagles dominate anything and everything here. And like the running joke is that the Eagles pay the bills in every sports media household in the tri-state region.
Sure.
You know? So it's always going to be about the Eagles. But the Sixers are very easily number two. And you know, I just think the nature of the process and how divisive that was and how much talk there was about it kind of generated this groundswell of like, hey, the Sixers are always in the news. You know, and there's been a lot of headlines and a lot of ups and downs and, you know, very interesting topics that stem from this team over the last like 5 to 7 years. And, you know, the arena is always packed and people are, it's a basketball town, you know, so people are interested in seeing that. And you know, it's been a long time since they've won it. So they are very squarely right behind the Eagles right now.
All right, so let's get to game three tonight. Is there still something about Toronto? What is it about Toronto that makes Philadelphia fans a little bit nervous about where this series could go?
I mean, they're athletic. You know, they're bouncy, they're long, they're rangy. You know, last time the Sixers played up there, they got clobbered because they just have, you know, all these kind of switchable, kind of 6'7", 6'8" kind of guys with length that can kind of get their hands up and be disruptive. And yeah, I think that's what people were worried about going into the series, you know, that they were going to make it hard on the Sixers offensively, which hasn't been the case so far. So I think Nick Nurse, the adjustment that he has to make is just, let's look, the fouls are the fouls. Like, we got to live with that, you know. What can we do outside of that to kind of limit Joel Embiid and limit James Harden's playmaking and, you know, maybe curb Tyrese Maxey or frustrate him, you know. So I think that's probably what you're looking for, you know. But, you know, the injuries and the absences, you know, Scottie Barnes, a big deal. You know, Gary Trent's an 18-point per game kind of guy, and he only played half of you know, game two, and they had foul trouble in game one. So it just hasn't looked like fundamental Toronto basketball that we expected, and yeah, maybe we get that tonight.
Kevin, great stuff. Really appreciate your time. Thank you so much in helping us. You're right. This team is always in the news. I'm glad you helped us sort of understand it a little bit more.
Hey, no problem. Happy to talk about it whenever you want, all right?
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Kevin Kincaid, crossingbroad.com is the website covering Philly sports on the Sixers. Listen, as I said earlier, I really remember the 80 Sixer teams and how dangerous that those teams were. Dr. J, Bobby Jones coming off the bench, Maurice Cheeks, Andrew Toney, Caldwell Jones. Like, I really remember them. And I know I've said this before, like, the Celtics and the Sixers have a deep rivalry. I mean, a real deep rivalry. It's not on the same level as Celtics-Lakers. I mean, Celtics-Lakers rivalry goes back, you know, into the 60s with, you know, Bill Russell, Jerry West, et cetera, Bob Cousy. But the Sixers-Celtic rivalry was as deep as it went. And I can remember Billy Cunningham and the Sixers in the Spectrum. And it was such a contrast. Like, it was like the Sixer fans, you always heard about Philadelphia fans and how rowdy they were. Boston fans were rowdy. But I'll never forget in the 1982 Eastern Conference Finals that the Sixers and the Celtics played against each other. You want to talk about how deep the Celtics-Laker rivalry is. Philadelphia and Boston were playing a Eastern Conference Finals in 82, and Philadelphia was up 3-1 on the Celtics, and the Celtics came back and they tied up the series by winning at the Spectrum on a Friday. And they went back to Boston on a Sunday to play Game 7. And in 1981, they did the exact same thing, and Boston won the series and went to the NBA championship, where they won the title over the Houston Rockets. In 1982, Philadelphia found itself in the same spot, same situation, back at the Boston Garden, where it was difficult to win, but they blew the Celtics out. I mean, they blew them out. And as Billy Cunningham was taking his starters out of the game, it was that much of a domination. He started taking the starters out of the game one by one. As those Sixer players were coming off the court, the Celtics fans at the Garden started chanting, "Beat LA, beat LA." That's the first time that that word used would later be used when they would cheer Boston on against the Lakers. But back in 1982, they were chanting it to the Sixers to beat their rival. "We don't like you, but we like you more than we like them. Go to the NBA Finals and please make sure you beat the LA Lakers." They did not do that. They ended up doing it a year later in 1983, and that's the last time the Philadelphia 76ers have won a championship. But back in the early 80s, they were part of that Sixer-Celtic-Laker sort of lore with the Houston Rockets of Moses Malone before Moses went to Philadelphia. It was sort of this, like, quad of good basketball teams, Celtics and Lakers, Philadelphia in that mix as well, Houston in that mix in 1981. But, man, it was – those series were as electric as the ones they would later face with the Lakers. A lot of people look at Larry Bird and Magic Johnson. Matt, they got into the league at the same time. They didn't face off against each other in the finals until 84. They were a good number of years into the league before the Celtics and the Lakers would meet in the NBA finals. They would meet again in 85 and then in 87. But it was in the early 80s, Philadelphia was in the mix. They played in the finals in 80, lost to the Lakers in 82, lost to the Lakers, won it in 1983. And they were right there. They were right there in that sort of pantheon of great basketball in the 1980s, and they haven't been heard from since in terms of like being a championship team. Been to a finals with Allen Iverson, but never became a team that was part of the lore of what basketball was when it came resurgence in the 80s. Never really got the credit that they deserved for being part of that story. All right, it's Wake Up Call as we continue on Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks to Kevin Kincaid for joining us on Sports Map Radio to talk Philadelphia 76ers. By the way, Kevin was on our Progressive guest line, Progressive Insurance, making bundling home and auto easy. Learn more at progressive.com. Yes, the untrusted Philadelphia 76ers. I'll believe it when I see it. That's basically how that's going to go.
You know, they kind of remind me of the Mets.
Yeah, like they're like you see them and you go, that should be a very, very good
team. Should be a great team.
Wake me up when they're in the World Series.
I saw the perfect question and answer. Guy was outside Citi Field talking to a fan. He's like, "What's your favorite thing about the Mets?" He's like, "Oh, you know, it builds great character in you because, you know, they've been terrible for so many years." He used a lot of expletives, obviously.
Right.
You know, but they're a character building team, and then when they're hot, when they're good, you feel like you've accomplished something. You've climbed the mountain. Right? He goes, "Well, okay, if that's the good, what's the bad thing?" And he goes, "May through September."
Right. Yeah. Right. Good point. Very, very
then
good.
I kind of feel that way about the Sixers that, well, I'd say over the last 3 to 4 years, they've had really great teams.
A team with Joel Embiid and James Harden and a Tyrese Maxey that's playing well, winning these games over Toronto at home, we shouldn't be like, wow.
Yeah, look what they're doing.
You know what I mean? And yet, there we are going, wow, look at them, a four seed at home, winning by double digits. Oh, my God. Like we're not doing that to any other team at home in the opening round of this series. Why are we doing it to the Sixers?
But I feel like if you're a Sixers fan, you're just waiting for that moment of like, okay, when's it going to fall apart?
Yeah, I definitely, definitely.
Because we were saying the same thing, like when it was, what was it? It was Joel Embiid, Nerlens Noel. Who was the guy with the big hands?
Oh,
Okafor? No, yeah. Oh, Jahlil Okafor?
Yeah, Jahlil Okafor.
I mean, wasn't that supposed to be a great team? I mean, they were getting like, they had every number one pick year after year after year, and they just couldn't get it together.
Yep.
And then you get Ben Simmons, and you're like, all right. Then
Ben Simmons, remember, he was going to change it. They had him all on the cover of Sports Illustrated. They were ready to take over the Eastern Conference, baby.
And what's our image of Ben Simmons with the Sixers? Passing up an easy dunk.
Passing up an
easy
dunk.
Or an easy
dunk.
Layup or whatever
it was. Speaking of easy, Free All Deep Penetrating Oil, delivering three times more lubricant, so this takes less spray, less torque, and less time than any other penetrating oil to get the job done. And I need that. Like, listen, man, the less work I can do, the better at my age. And Free All Deep Penetrating Oil certainly helps with corroded U-bolts, rusty pliers and other tools you can't get open, brake caliper removals, pillow block, universal rusted joints, stuck ball joints, seized engines, you name it. Free All Deep Penetrating Oil can help. We think you're going to be happy with this. You can find it on the shelves at AutoZone, O'Reilly, Napa Auto Parts, and even select Walmart stores. Again, less spray, less torque, less time, three times more lubricant. That's Free All Deep Penetrating Oil. Hey, we'll get into the Milwaukee Bucks with Alex Strauff coming up. I got him right. I got Kevin.
Yep.
Alex Strauff. Yeah, see, you've given me two guests today with names that don't immediately look like they are. That's how you would pronounce it. Like Kevin Kincaid is K-I-N-K-E-A-D, which is Cade, but it could be Keed.
Yeah.
Kincaid, if you wanted to get really crazy. And Strauff is S-T-R-O-U-F, which could be Stroof.
I think it's Strofe.
Strofe.
I don't know. It was however I wrote it to you.
Right.
I try to help you out from time to time. Strofe.
That's fine. I'll do Strofe. You know?
I've heard it both ways. He'll respond either way.
Okay. That'll be good.
As long as you don't, as long as you don't go strafe or strife.
Right, right.
Or add more
to it than you need, right, exactly.
As long as you don't call him Alex Kincaid.
Right.
I think you should be fine.
I should be good to go with all that. So we'll talk Milwaukee Bucks. They are an interesting team too, because their opening game series against Chicago was a dud.
Yeah.
It was actually terrible. By the way, Boston and Brooklyn tonight.
That should be exciting.
Game two. I'm really curious. Is that how that's going to go down?
Yeah.
Because we were saying this on Monday. Hey, look, if you open that door, if you're Kyrie and you've opened that door to let people of Boston know that he hears you and he's responding to you, what are they going to do tonight?
Pandora's box right there.
Right?
Exactly. All right, so he was fined by the NBA, right?
Was it $50,000?
Yeah. Do you think he even cares?
No. As long as he wasn't getting suspended.
He might double down
tonight. I think he's like, no, I'll pay it all.
The thing is, he can't back down now because he already says, like, hey, I'll give them the same energy they're giving me.
Yeah.
So
I think I said this before. When you pay your NBA fine, does anybody know where that money goes? They always say it goes to charity. Which charity? You know?
The NBA charity.
Does it go into the Adam Silver Starving Children in My House charity? Like, where does it go? Like if you're an NBA player, don't you have every right to go, let me tell you what, I want to know exactly where this money's going.
I'll write the check directly to them.
I was going to just say that. Yeah, like, why can't Kyrie Irving go, I'll tell you what, you give that money to charity, how about you tell me what charity you want this to go to, and I will show you how I'm giving it. And I'll probably even give more if you tell me which charity it is. But giving you a check? Please. You getting a certain percentage off the top? Let's see. I don't know. I never know these leagues. Golf leagues, whatever. They're all fine, but they're supposed to have a place with that money. Not supposed to go in the old vault.
It's going to, like, the swear jar.
Yeah, exactly.
The fine jar, and then, I don't know, they go and get a case of something.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So Milwaukee and Chicago, that game is also tonight, game two.
That series just doesn't interest me just yet.
Not yet. And you know what it is? I'm sorry, but it's Chicago. It's not so much Milwaukee. Chicago is, they're a team that benefited from bad teams and then couldn't beat the good teams. They were, again, you were a below 500 struggling, Chicago will beat you. If you were one of the elite teams in the NBA, you could beat them. You'll beat them. And until I like that Sunday's game was really, those two teams were really sloppy. really, really sloppy on Easter Sunday. I think the Bulls shot 32% from the floor, something ridiculous. Like, that's college basketball.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
I told you we're double hitting you in this hour. Two guests, we were talking Philadelphia 76ers early, staying in the Eastern Conference of Milwaukee Bucks and the Chicago Bulls game too tonight. Progressive Insurance, making bundling home and auto easy. Learn more at progressive.com, Progressive Guest Line. Alex Stroof joins us. He is with ESPN Milwaukee. Bucks at 6 at ESPN Milwaukee. How are you, Alex?
I'm good. How are you?
Great. The Bucks. Let's start there with the regular season. They finished 20 games over 500. So, but how much of the oh my goodness, it's the regular season. We're the world champs. Can we just get to the playoffs as quickly as possible? How much of that did you see of this team as they went through 82 games?
A fair amount. I think that's a very fair question to start with, right? Yeah. I mean, I don't want to call it hangover because I don't think that's what it's been, but I think it's okay, we know what this team's capable of. We know how good we are. The regular season, it's just the regular season. So there was a little bit more, there was a little bit more off days than I think you saw in past years. There was a little bit less, I guess, worry during the regular season. And then towards the end of the regular season, those last couple of games, they sat their guys because they kind of wanted, I think, to drop to that 3 seed rather than take the 2 seed. So
sure.
It worked out. I mean, I think they've got a nice path and, starting off with the Bulls here and then getting the winner, we assume, of the Celtics Nets series. It's actually going to work out pretty nice for them, it looks. So I think that's a fair point. I don't think there's any championship hangover because they still do look like one of, if not the best team in basketball, but it was certainly not what it's been years past.
How would you describe the 93-86 game one? It looked sloppy, but there was some turnovers. There was some bad shooting. The Bulls especially had bad shooting. How would you describe the game one and what, especially on the Milwaukee side, how do you describe it?
Yeah, choppy. Let me hit you with a stat here on your Wednesday morning. The Milwaukee Bucks are now 4-6 in game ones under head coach Mike Budenholzer.
Ah, nice.
Really odd stat, isn't it?
Right.
So they would have been 3-7 had they let that game slip away. So it was a choppy, kind of ugly win, is how Mike Budenholzer described it. But it's a win, right? A win's a win, is what we always say. So it was weird. They came out really hot. They were up 13 after the first quarter ended. And then they kind of let it slip away. It was almost like the rust from a 5-day layoff set in after the first quarter. It was just so odd, to your point. So I'm not worried about it. I think, maybe they got some of those butterflies out, some of that rust knocked off in that first game. And I honestly expect more smooth sailing, in game two tonight and moving forward in this series. The Bucks have absolutely had the Bulls number this year and in several years past. In their last 18 games against the Bulls, they're 17-1. So
yeah.
I like their chances the rest of the way. But you're absolutely right. That was a really, really weird game one. One of the weirder matchups I remember between these two teams in a while.
Long-term look at the postseason, is there something that is concerning to Milwaukee as they enter the playoffs?
Yeah, I don't know. I think depth was something, you were worried about a few years ago, but I think they're in a better place than they have been in a while in terms of depth, right? You've got some things to figure out, like if it's Grayson Allen or Pat Connaughton you want coming off the bench for an extended period of time, right? Both of those guys got 18 minutes in game one, but as you get further into the playoffs, one of them is going to have to probably take a back seat. So I think that's an interesting little predicament they'll have coming up. Who's your number two, I guess, would be my biggest question. Is it Chris Middleton or is it Drew Holiday? I mean, I think I lean more Drew Holiday, but, that was a question we got answered last year was, okay, who's going to be the number three? We know you've got Giannis and Chris, but who's your number three? Because that's how you're going to take that next step and compete for a championship. Obviously, they won one last year. So when Drew Holiday came in, he made a very nice impact, but now this year it seems like he might be playing an even bigger role, and Chris Middleton is playing a little third fiddle. So I guess you've got to figure out who's going to be that consistent number two behind Giannis Antetokounmpo. And even if you don't, I don't view it as the biggest problem in the world, but I think it's a nice issue to solve, moving into the playoffs, really figuring out that identity offensively.
If you don't mind, I'd like to get kind of a larger picture question on this team, because
Sure. You
come off a championship, and we've seen teams do this. They come off this championship, the city's electric, they're electric. There's a feeling, especially when nobody has won one or the city hasn't won one in a while. But then the business of the sport takes over. Were they affected by that during this offseason? Were there tough decisions that had to be made, or is this generally the same team that's going into the playoffs?
Great question, first off. But no, I think it's generally the same team, right? I mean, they didn't have to make a ton of big decisions. The one big change they made is there's no PJ Tucker on this team, and obviously he was a big spark plug, I think is a good term to use, last year during the championship run. But overall, I don't see a ton of differences with this team. To your earlier question, right? I mean, there was that little bit of, I said I didn't want to use the term hangover, but I'm going to use it.
Sure.
There was a little bit of that hangover during the regular season where, you know, it just didn't feel like it mattered as much because there had been such bigger aspirations met the season prior by winning their first title for the city of Milwaukee in over 50 years. So I don't view any issues. I think this team knows their identity. They know, you know, the polished rotation they're going to roll with here the rest of the way. They're capable of. They've got three superstars in their starting lineup in the three guys I just mentioned, as well as some really nice depth. So I don't see a ton of issues, to be real honest with you, Tony. But I'm sure once we get into a series next round, whether it be the Nets or the Celtics, I think that's where you'll find out where some of those problems lie. But I don't know that you'll be real worried or feel any real pressure against Chicago in the first round. I just don't see it as a real tough matchup for Milwaukee.
Is there a particular defensive style that bogs Giannis down that we've seen in the postseason in the past?
Yeah, when you jump on his back and try to ride him, like you piggyback ride style, right? Like I don't know, but because I saw him do something in Game One, Tony, that I said this last night on Bucks at Six. There are not many times with guys of his status, right? Like a two-time MVP, a Finals MVP, a Defensive Player of the Year, yada yada yada, where you see him do something and you go, I've never seen something like that before. And in Game One, I watched him kind of struggle his way outside of the lane. He was triple covered, and then he said, "I don't know what to do with the basketball, so I'm going to throw it off the backboard and then I'm going to dunk it. That's just what I'm going to do while I'm triple covered." Like, what the hell? Who does that? So I just am always so blown away by the capabilities that dude has. So I don't know that there's a real defensive style that bogs him down, right? Like, he's not the greatest jump shooter in the world, but we saw him knock down an open three right away in Game One to kind of get over that hump. So, you know, it was a mid-range thing that we've always been worried about. There's still some development that could be done there. But he is pretty darn versatile, you know, more so than he was 3-4 years ago. So I don't know that I have a good answer for that, honestly.
You know, because, I mean, I'm not trying to look ahead. I'm really trying to respect these series. But I keep thinking, like, if Boston doesn't get Robert Williams back, that and if they play face Milwaukee, that's a real problem for the Celtics.
Yeah, it absolutely is, right? Like, I totally agree. He is a huge piece to that Boston team. I'm hoping they get him back because I hate seeing teams not full
Me
strength
too.
This time of year as a fan of basketball, right? But, you know, that would obviously be who they likely have matching up on Giannis at least the majority of the time. So, honestly, I'm hoping they get him back. As weird as that is to say as a Milwaukee Bucks fan, I want to see him back in the mix of things because I want full strength when these two teams possibly meet next round. But, no, that's a fair point.
All right. Good. Enjoy Game Two tonight. Thank you so much, Alex. Really appreciate your time tonight. We really appreciate it this morning.
Yeah, no problem, dude. We'll talk to you soon.
Alex Stroff again, Bucks at Six on ESPN Milwaukee, talking Bucks. And again, the big question for me going in with Milwaukee this, you know, was now they're here, right? Again, we've talked about this with football a lot, especially in the NFL. If you are a team and you either get to a Super Bowl, lose a championship game in the AFC or the NFC, or lose a Super Bowl, and you know you're talented, you tend to just want to get right where you were before, right? Oh, God, I got to go through 16 games, 17 games, whatever it is. Imagine you're Milwaukee and how much fun it was to go through a postseason and the excitement of playing Brooklyn and getting to the finals and facing Phoenix and seeing the energy of the crowd inside the arena, outside the arena, right? Just feeling the energy of the city that's championship starved. And then you're like, can we just do that again? Like, where were, how do we get to that part again? And then they go, yeah, you got to go through these 82 games all through the winter. And you go, oh, okay. So naturally, I mean, again, don't get me wrong. It's not like they finished 500 and they're good. Like they finished 20 games above 500. Fine. But they were a team that was, again, you could feel it. You could see it sometimes during the regular season where you'd go, you know, get me to this point. Like, get me to where I just left off, because that's where the fun starts. Teams do this all the time. They do it all the time. And especially in the NFL, how many teams coming off a Super Bowl or an AFC championship that start the season like 3-2 do we go, what's wrong with the Chiefs or the Bills? And you go, you know what? You know what's wrong? It's that what they just experienced last year and what they went into the offseason thinking about and what they went into training camp thinking about and all of the work that they put into it, all of the, hey, I'm a quarterback, come to my house and I'll throw you the football type of things, wasn't to play game one against the Steelers. It was to play the championship game against the Chiefs, right? Or whatever it was. That's what you think about. And so at the beginning of the season, you try to be focused. You're not, and you go, you know, imagine 82 games of that. You're the world champs, and you know you're talented. You know you're good. And you know if you get into the postseason healthy, you're a tough out in seven games. And that's what you get, you know, that feeling like, oh, well, why didn't Milwaukee just dominate the East? Like, why is Miami dominating the East? Because Miami isn't coming off a championship like they were, right? And a team as loaded as they were. And that's why. But I kind of like what he said. It's you know, Boston, we talked about this with Jason Barrett, Brian Barrett, I should say, earlier this week. Brian said something really interesting. The Celtics played really good down the stretch, but it was almost to their detriment, because Chicago is an easier opponent than Brooklyn, right? Chicago is a much easier opponent than Brooklyn. And they were probably better off getting the Chicago series. Let Milwaukee get the Brooklyn series, or whoever's coming out of the playing game, which looked likely it was going to be Brooklyn, than the Celtics. But if you do get a Milwaukee-Boston series coming up next, watch out for that Robert Williams addition. If the Boston can get him, it'll be interesting. If they can't, I don't think they stand a chance against Giannis and that team and their size. All right, we'll come up, wrap it up as we continue with Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, Throwback Thursday tomorrow. Do you have one in mind? I think you told me yesterday, but I kind of forgot.
I have a couple.
Don't give it away.
No, I'm not going to give it away. I have a couple of mine.
All right, very good. It's a 21st.
Yep.
So. All right. Is this the 420 song?
Yes.
Nothing gets by me.
Man. Nothing. Nothing.
Actually,
just trying to slide it in there.
Slide it in there. Get the 420 song in there. Happy 420 day, whatever that is.
If you celebrate.
If you celebrate, if it's legal in your state.
Yes.
Which, by the way, I think within 5 years it'll be legal in every state.
I think so too.
There'll be one or two states that are like, we're never legalizing.
Yeah,
ever.
Ours.
Probably.
All right? The states that begin with the letter T.
Right, yeah. Mine too. Nah, we ain't need that stuff here. Have some more whiskey. God. Great. It is a crazy world, isn't it?
It
is a crazy world. It really is. It's all changing. Gambling and marijuana, the two things people thought never ever would get legalized.
I mean, growing up, I mean, it was just they were the evils.
Yeah.
You know, gambling was only going to be in Atlantic City and Vegas, pretty much.
Yep. It was either Atlantic City, Vegas, or you better be in an Indian casino. That was it. Now,
not even Indian casinos. Like, when we were kids, so it was just
those
two.
Yeah, when we were
two.
Younger, no, that was it. Vegas and Atlantic City, that was it.
New Jersey, Nevada, and they were godless places.
Yep, no kidding.
Now it's like, then, now we're looking at like, man, how do we get that?
Yeah. Now everybody wants a piece of it, right?
Oh,
everybody
yeah.
Everybody wants a piece. Same with marijuana. When I was in Colorado and they legalized it, and I remember we, you know, the news department was doing a story on the revenue, and I was like, what? I was like, everyone said it would be big, but I didn't know it was that big.
I think that's what the driving force is now. Honestly, the driving force to both of those is money.
You know, imagine if you were in the restaurant business, or like you, a fast food restaurant business, you went to a fast food convention, right? And you went, dude, let me tell you something. The 640 fryer, it cooks those French fries better than anything I've ever had. And they all talk amongst themselves. I'm like, really? Yeah, trust me. It's a great machine, man. You ought to get it. Do you think governors, when they get together in Washington, go, you would not believe how much cash this thing is putting in our coffers?
You know what we don't talk about here? We don't talk about cutting the arts and music program in our elementary schools.
Let me tell you what, guys. You wouldn't believe the money. You're printing it. You can't print it faster than it's coming in.
What, the revenue from gambling?
Well, yeah. Well,
forget it.
Forget that. Yeah. You don't even want to know our money. Oh, my goodness. And the other governors go back to their home state, and they're like, we got to talk to somebody.
Yeah, wait. I'm struggling to put, you know.
Right?
You know, I'm going to have to cut sports for this one school district.
I'm cutting recess. Yeah. Nobody's eating school lunches.
No, free school lunches. We can't do that anymore. Meanwhile, Washington's like, here, have all the food. We're good.
Yeah, exactly.
You got too much.
We'll bring in an omelet chef in the morning for you.
Free of charge.
Exactly. All right, we'll see you tomorrow for Throwback Thursday. Keep it here on Sports Map Radio. I'm Tony D, Ron Culver, and this is Wake Up Call.